Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. I welcome you to another opportunity to have an in-depth conversation about topics that are just so important and relevant to our health and well-being. This show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible regarding your health and well-being. And today is no exception. We have a fantastic guest, and we're going to be talking about a really important topic. But before I go there, I want to be sure to welcome all my new listeners and to invite them to go over to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com. It's a great place to get some free special reports, and also if you opt in there, you will get all my archive shows. I'll be sending them out to you on a regular basis. And in addition to that, you can go to my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, because I post there on a daily basis with great information. Just, you know, it's just continuing the process of accessing the most relevant information to help you make those optimal choices for your health and well-being. So, having said all that, I think we should just jump into my interview today. So I want to introduce you to my guest. He is the author of a wonderful book called Gut Crisis: How Diet, Probiotics, and Friendly Bacteria Help You Lose Weight and Heal Your Body and Mind. And my guest, my very special guest, is Robert Keith Wallace, who is a pioneering researcher on the physiology of consciousness. His work has inspired hundreds of studies on the benefits of meditation and mind-body techniques, and his findings have been published in Science, American Journal of Physiology, and Scientific American. After receiving his Bachelor of Science in Physics and his PhD in Physiology from UCLA, he conducted postgraduate work at Harvard University. And Dr. Wallace established the first Maharishi Ayurvedic Clinic in America in Fairfield, Iowa, Los Angeles, California, and Washington, D.C. He is the director of one of the first master degree programs in Maharishi Ayurveda and Integrative Medicine in the U.S. He serves as professor and chairman of the Department of Physiology and Health, director of research and trustee of Maharishi University of Management in Fairfield, Iowa. The author of several books, Dr. Wallace has given hundreds of lectures on Maharishi consciousness-based education and health programs around the world. And his most recent book is Gut Crisis: How Diet, Probiotics, and Friendly Bacteria Help You Lose Weight and Heal Your Mind and Body. So we have quite a conversation in store for you today, and I'd like to welcome Robert Keith Wallace, who I will be referring to as his preferred Keith Wallace. So, Keith, thank you.
Thank you
for coming. Boy, you know, you have such an impressive resume, and I've looked at your books. How many books have you written in total now?
I'm not actually sure. I think it's like seven, I think. I have to keep track myself. It's been over a long period of time, and they're very diverse. You know, some of them are on transcendental meditation because that's the thing I've studied the most. But then the last book I wrote was published by Penguin, and it was on Dharma parenting. You know, so I go all over the place. I really enjoy writing and covering a lot of different topics. But I guess the place I'm really interested these days is natural medicine.
So how did you get from all the writings you did on consciousness and meditation to writing a book about the gut?
I know. It's an interesting journey. But I think if you go back to every system of natural medicine, and the one I'm particularly interested in is Ayurveda from India, they all have the same basic notion that all disease begins in the gut. And that's a famous quote by Hippocrates, the father of Western medicine. And I think, you know, it's funny. We live in a world where doctors have almost no training in nutrition. They know very little about diet. They would hardly know what to prescribe in terms of diet. They have some understanding of lifestyle. But we're so oriented to giving a pill that that's the kind of way the society works today. I just read a really interesting book, another book, which caught my interest. It's called The End of Alzheimer's. I don't know if you've seen that book by Dr. Dale Bredesen. And it's very interesting because Alzheimer's is one of the few conditions in the world where there's no pill. You get Alzheimer's, you might get a pill to slow it down slightly, but it's pretty much a prescription for quite a dismal life and a lot of caretakers to help you out. And he's actually come up with a program that uses diet and healing the gut and a lot of other lifestyle programs, including a very careful monitoring, you know, from the point of view of functional medicine, of hormones. And he's had a remarkable, unprecedented cure, you know, published in good journals. And I think it's going to change the medicine. I think it's just what we needed. People have just not been paying attention to diet. People eat junk food. They don't really know. Even if you're a kind of a health expert, you get caught between the paleos and the vegans, and you don't know which one is right. We're all confused about it. I mean, and here this guy's come up with a protocol that cures one of the worst diseases mankind has known, and which we're all going to be faced with, either ourselves or some relative. One out of three people die of Alzheimer's or some form of dementia, the seniors, you know. So this is super serious, and there's no pill. So you can't go take your statin or your blood pressure pill and pretend that you're healthy. You actually have to do something that involves changing your diet, involves healing your gut, making your microbiome in a balanced state, and exercising, checking on hormones, taking vitamins. I mean, every doctor is going to have to suddenly wake up and learn about all the alternative medicines. They're going to have to become naturopaths, basically. And the consumer is going to drive it. And the food industry and pharmaceuticals are going to have to change because there is no pill and there's going to be a huge demand. So I'm really excited about what's happening. I love the microbiome, the study of gut bacteria. I think it's a perfect integration between the old and the new, between all the ancient ideas which, you know, we all kind of love but nobody takes seriously, and all the very new ideas, and suddenly boom, everybody's woken up to the microbiome. There's, you know, hundreds of studies all the time showing that it affects weight loss, it affects autism, it affects, you know, everything you can imagine, diabetes, Parkinson's, autoimmune disease. And nobody had any idea of this 10 years ago. They couldn't even study these bacteria. They lived in conditions which were, you couldn't grow them in a scientific laboratory. Only gene sequencing has made it possible to study them. So this is a very exciting and fun time.
Well, I want to quote you from your book that I think is really relevant. We can, you know, kind of jump off from there. Medical science is beginning to understand that what the ancients have known for centuries, an imbalanced gut leads to disease. It begins with a break in the gut wall, followed by a local inflammatory response. This leads to a chronic state of inflammation, which is the source of disorders ranging from heart disease to Alzheimer's. So I think it really is important for us to begin to unravel the story of the microbiome, which, you know, I've had many guests on. This is a topic that really fascinates me. And having had an autoimmune disease in my life, I was very much aware how the gut has played a role in the creation of my autoimmune disease. And by the way, I have successfully healed it. It was Hashimoto's thyroiditis, so it was an autoimmune disease affecting my thyroid. Probably other things were going on in my body as well. And so I have just been so fascinated and passionate about strategies to help us heal our gut, because I really believe most of us in this country, probably in other westernized countries as well, are really suffering from a compromised microbiome and the consequences to our health from a gut that really is not functioning, from a gut environment that is not functioning properly. So I think this is such a great conversation to help more and more of us understand the role between our intestinal environment, the microbiomes, the microbiota, the bacteria that live within the gut, and how that gets damaged and leads to all of these health problems, including, as you were saying earlier, Alzheimer's. So why don't we just jump in, Keith, and help us understand this?
Sure. It's quite interesting. Really, food is medicine. Food, we didn't know the mechanics of that, but food is medicine. And how is it medicine? Well, the diet we take affects what bacteria are living in our gut. And, of course, there are other things that affect it. If we have an antibiotic, it's like napalm in the gut. And we know that antibiotics have saved millions of lives, but they've also been massively overprescribed. So diet, antibiotics, the way you're born. If you're born a cesarean birth, you get bacteria from the hospital environment instead of the vaginal canal. So this is there's many, many things that affect this whole ecology that goes on down there. But when it gets disrupted, then things start going wrong. And the gut is a very delicate area. It's, 30 feet of exposed entrance into the body. Now, it's not completely exposed because the cells are all held tightly together and they have membranes and they try to only let in certain areas, good things and not bad things. So, they're very specific, like, it's like a wall of a castle. There are very specific entry points for nutrients, whether they're vitamin, minerals, or amino acids, or, sugars or fats. Very, very highly regulated how they get in. But now we find out that the bacteria also act like protecting agents that help line this wall and keep away bad bacteria. So friendly bacteria line the wall, and they keep away bad bacteria. And why are bad bacteria bad? Well, we know. Anybody that's gone to a developing country and gotten diarrhea knows exactly how easy it is to eat something. And if you get a bad bacteria in there you're not used to, and those friendly bacteria can't defend against it, suddenly, you have Delhi Belly or Montezuma's Revenge, and it's no fun at all. The whole system reacts violently to it. And what turns out, about 80% of your immune system is along the gut wall. So obviously this is a very important area. You've got a huge number of immune cells that are watching carefully to see if anything gets in, if they get past the friendly bacteria, if somehow there's a break in the wall. Well, how can there be a break in the wall? The wall is composed of cells that are all joined together. And how are they joined together? They're kind of bound together by a protein cord. And what happens is that certain things can cause that binding to loosen up. In some cases, it's good for it to be loose. If you have to get rid of a lot of water and you want to flush out bacteria, the body has a mechanism to do that. And it turns out when somebody was studying this, they actually found that certain biochemicals can trigger this junction called a tight junction between two different cells to open up. Normally, nutrients only go across membranes. They don't go between cells. But in this case where the gut gets disrupted, things that binding loosens up and you start to get things going through between cells. Now, the most classic case, which we now understand and which really gives us the mechanism for what's happening here, is celiac disease. And celiac disease, we know, is from gluten. It's kind of a rare disease, but it turns out that a lot of people are undiagnosed with it and that there are people that are gluten intolerant or gluten sensitive. So many, many more people have it than we thought before. Gluten contains this one substance called gliadin. Gliadin kind of fits into a little receptor on one of the cell surfaces. It causes the production of a T chemical with a very strange name called zonulin. It's not a character from Star Trek, but it's a real chemical in the body. And that chemical has the effect of loosening these tight junctions, of causing these cords to loosen up that hold the cells together. And when that happens, things leak in. And this is where we get the idea of leaky gut. Most doctors talk about it as increased intestinal permeability. But leaky gut is actually a very good description of what happens. And you get in parts of bacteria that the body doesn't like, things called lipopolysaccharides. And when they get in, the immune system starts to go nuts. And you set off a chain reaction. The immune system doesn't like undigested food getting between cells into the bloodstream. It doesn't like these bacteria pieces. It doesn't like bacteria getting in. And so the immune system, depending on your genetic predisposition, can set off this chain reaction, and you can go from simple localized inflammatory response to an autoimmune response. Everything from diabetes to Parkinson's, to everything, all the autoimmune diseases, now rheumatoid arthritis, are tied back to this leaky gut, or if you want to call it increased intestinal permeability. And this, now this model, once you have this simple model and you know all the mechanics, then the scientists are more comfortable with understanding, okay, well, if this is happening here with this one kind of food, could it be happening with other foods, with other situations? And indeed, that's what's unfolding. So we're now getting a very clear idea of what are the mechanics of how a disrupted gut, through the friendly bacteria being disrupted, and through certain foods triggering responses in the wall of the gut, where you get this beginning of what turns out to be a cascading kind of turmoil in the body. Now, mostly what celiac is in the small intestine. Most of the bacteria actually are in the large intestine. So that's a whole different area, but presumably there's a similar mechanism there. And we know pretty much that the bacteria in the large intestine produce a massive array of chemicals. They produce hormones, neurotransmitters. They produce chemicals that can actually regulate the genes in our body. They can turn on and off genes in our body. They can communicate to the vagus nerve, one of the biggest, most important nerves in the body, right up to the brain, send signals. We can be depressed and happy as a result of disrupted conditions in the gut bacteria. So almost every disease can be traced back in one way or another to this disruption in the gut, somewhere in the gut, and it's just kind of huge what the impact of this is. Because for the first time, we now have to consider, wow, what am I doing to my gut? What am I putting in there? What are the kinds of things that affect it? Can I change my diet and improve my health? And it now has a very valid and scientifically verified basis to it. So traditions like Ayurveda or Chinese medicine or just natural medicine all over the world, suddenly they become, hey, these guys actually knew something. They were smart. They knew exactly what to do. We take probiotics now. Now, probiotics are a huge area of controversy, but the latest studies convincingly have shown that probiotics really help, especially for irritable bowel syndrome, which is basically diarrhea, constipation, abdominal pain, all kinds of disruption in the gut. And so probiotics are good. But, you know, the ancients knew that. They had all kinds of fermented drinks. They had all kinds of yogurt products. In some of these traditions, like Ayurveda, you even find probiotic enemas, which some doctors are using now with great success in very difficult diseases. And back 2,000 years ago, they had the equivalent of that in Ayurveda called bhasti, where they used all kinds of herbs, all kinds of oils, and they directly affected the gut bacteria, which are mostly in the large intestine and colon. So it's a kind of revelation what's going on, a huge paradigm shift where the ancient knowledge is suddenly emerging as powerful and new and something that we can all really benefit from.
And, you know, I've mostly studied traditional Chinese medicine, which has so many similarities as Ayurveda. And those ancient systems had such an understanding of the body, of imbalances, of using food, herbs, lifestyle to bring about healing. You know, we're, you know, returning to this wisdom because it's really a tried and true system. It's been around for thousands of years, and it's really offering us solutions. I know that I've gone through my phase, Keith. I've been a vegetarian and then tried a little high-fat paleo protein thing, you know, and it's like, no, it didn't work. And I've gone back to eating in balance, eating with the seasons, eating with the various, you know, natural approaches, the real foods, and eating in a way that is subscribed by more traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. And that's the one that works best for me, particularly working with the season and the energies of the season and the foods of the season. Just makes a lot of sense to me personally, and it certainly has worked for enhancing my health and well-being.
Well, I think it's brilliant. I mean, you know, you've done all the right things, and everybody's different. That's the key here. And even, you know, in Chinese traditional medicine and in Ayurveda, they have different types, and the different types clearly need different things. You know, in Ayurveda, they have a Vata type, which is usually very thin and very sensitive and really has to be careful about cold and needs a routine. Then they have a Pitta type that's more fiery, that really, you know, needs to eat on time, can't be in the sun too much. And then they have a Kapha type, which is more of your kind of good-natured, but can gain weight. So they have to be careful about their weight. I like food and can easily gain weight. And I have a quiz on my website, docgut.com, which is docgut.com, and that quiz allows you to tell which of those gut brain types you are and gives you recommendations on food based on Ayurveda. I also have a chart on there which basically rates all the different probiotics by quite kind of a very extensive means, and blogs too. But the main thing I wanted to bring out here was that this whole notion of types and individualization is very important. You found what was good for you, and everybody has to do the same thing. I really believe that the best approach is to start with a very plain diet. If you're a paleo, it can be bone broth and meats, and you cut out gluten, you cut out dairy, you cut out sugar, and you do it for a month. And then you reintroduce foods like gluten or like dairy, and you see what the effect is. If you're a vegetarian, an Ayurveda person, or a vegan, again, you have to have some sort of grain, so usually you have some kind of like mung dal or rice, and then you cut out all the gluten, cut out as much, cut out dairy, cut out sugar, and do it for a month. Give the chance, give the gut a chance to rest and repair itself, and then reintroduce foods and, you know, keep your diary and figure out, hey, this gives me a brain fog. I don't want that food. This food makes me feel great. I like this food. It's so individualized, and it kind of takes a little bit of time and effort, you know, and then at some point you got to start putting in probiotics just to give a chance for the gut to reestablish itself. I mean, the probiotics are small in numbers, so they don't really repopulate the gut. I mean, essentially, you got 30 trillion bacteria in there of over 1,000 different types. You're taking a probiotic, it's, you know, a minuscule amount, and it's only like, you know, 5 or 7 types. But somehow they're helping to organize everything. And you do that, and then, you know, you improve different parts of your lifestyle and stick, like you've done, stick to a diet that suits you. And wow, that has such a, I mean, curing your disease, a congratulations. That's wonderful what you did. That's just like so impressive. And, you know, kind of we all have to start doing that if we're going to beat all these terrible chronic diseases.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's finding the path back to healing the gut and even helping people understand that they have a problem with their gut. And maybe that would be helpful to go over for people to really look at some of the classic symptoms that indicate your gut has been impaired. And I would say if you've had even just one dose of an antibiotic or a steroid or have been on hormones like the pill or HRT or even bioidentical hormones, you probably have disturbed your healthy gut microbiome.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's delicate. It's interesting. Some people recover miraculously from antibiotics and other people don't at all. So again, it's very individualized. And we know that, you know, when the gut gets really destroyed, like you've had excessive amounts of antibiotics, then the unfriendly bacteria can take over. And that can be very, very hard to get rid of them. They're very tenacious. And people have to take probiotics every day. And they really have to do some serious changes to get rid of them. But for most people who've taken, you know, antibiotics throughout their lives, just basics can do it, like, you know, giving a chance for the gut to repair itself. So what you might come in with excess gas. Maybe you go to sleep at night and you're burping and you're, you know, noticing that you've got excess gas and you're gaining weight. You're getting that kind of beer belly that everyone gets, and you're kind of like, you don't want that as you get older, and you don't want to go to sleep, you know, with your partner and you're belching half the night. It's not fun for anybody. So, you know, you got to do something about it. And you don't think it's a big deal. You think, oh, well, you know, I just ate something that didn't agree. But those are just signs from nature, whether it's diarrhea or constipation or excess gas or whether it's, you know, some kind of occasional abdominal pain. That's just nature telling you, hey, something's wrong down here. This is just the beginning. You better pay attention because this is going to develop into something more serious. You may not connect the dots, but you get some autoimmune disease, and you could have prevented it long ago if you just paid attention to these imbalances, which didn't seem like so much at the time, but they're, you know, our body trying to tell us, hey, wake up, stop feeding me junk food. Stop putting things down here. They're going to disrupt me. Give me a chance to get normal and to rebalance and to send healthy signals to the body.
I think often people ignore bloating after a meal. They just think that's normal.
Yeah.
Or that feeling of being tired and lethargic after having a meal. You know,
exactly.
Those are symptoms often ignored, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. In Ayurveda, they have this concept of ama, which is sort of a toxin or undigested food. And you can take a simple questionnaire, and some of the, you know, things they ask are you tired after you eat? Just like you said, are you bloated after you eat? So that's those. And what happens, again, is that essentially you're getting a brain fog. You know, you eat something, and then you can't think clearly afterwards. Decreased energy, all these things are really very, very clear signs that the gut isn't functioning well. It's probably in a state of chronic inflammation, and until you actually take some time, it's like a wound that you're constantly opening up, until you actually take the time to heal it, give it a chance to heal itself, because the body's very good at healing itself, but you got to give it rest. You can't keep putting all the causal agents in there. You've got to put something soothing in there, and then the body will heal itself, and those symptoms will go away. Your weight will come back to a very nice level, and a lot of the worst diseases that we don't want anything to do, they just won't appear because the gut is now doing its job, what it's supposed to do.
You know, I want us to talk about some of those solutions, and particularly some of the strategies based on Ayurveda approach. But before we do that, can you help us understand the connection between chronic illnesses such as Alzheimer's and a compromised gut and this leaky gut condition, this chronic inflammation of the lining of the gut that lets these tight junctions loosen and allow undigested food particles get into our bloodstream where they should not be?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. In this book I was telling you about, The End of Alzheimer's, he gives a kind of fascinating explanation. Alzheimer's has been traditionally characterized by the buildup of a very odd kind of protein. It's called beta amyloid plaque. And people have pretty much thought, oh, this is the cause of the disease. And most of the drugs that, you know, billions of dollars have gone into developing these drugs have tried to target this beta amyloid plaque and destroy it. And his point of view, which is very interesting, Dr. Bredesen, is that, no, the beta amyloid plaque is more of a side effect of the gut being leaky, the brain barrier being leaky, and bacteria, viruses get into the brain, and this is kind of the debris after the immune system has tried to destroy those agents in the brain. It's also caused by genes being turned on and off, which somehow switch the whole system over to a system which tries to destroy the connections between the brain, these synapses, rather than a system which actually keeps on building up the proper connections. And that the beta amyloid plaque is like an adaptation. It's the body's way of sort of compensating for all the terrible things we're doing to it, or the brain's way in this case. And it's just really a sign that, the brain, the genes that are, you know, going to make us healthy have been turned off, and the genes that are going to make us sick have been turned on, and there's an imbalance. And it's not an easy one to correct, because the imbalance is at such a deep level, at this genetic level. There's, you know, the whole field of epigenetics where food, lifestyle, all the kinds of things in the environment can turn genes on and off in our body. Well, at a certain point in our life, it's probably the junk food, excessive sugar, excessive antibiotics, and all these different environmental components have been switching genes on and off on our body for a long time. At some point, it gets into this kind of very bad state where it starts to break down these synapses in the brain. And as a result, and you get some of the barriers, like the gut barrier, where you get inflammation, you get the blood-brain barrier opening up, and that's the one that protects the brain. You get viruses leaking in, you get bacteria leaking in. And generally, it's war that's going on. A lot of inflammation is taking place in the brain, taking place in other parts of the body, because the immune system's trying to protect us. We've allowed the barrier to open up. Things are getting in. We've had foods that have affected certain genes, turning some off and some on. And we got to reboot the whole system. It's kind of a computer that's gone wacky. And, you know, it's kind of a miracle. You turn your computer on and off again, and boom, suddenly it works again. Wow, that's amazing. How did that happen? There's a lot of intelligence in the body. So if you can give it a rest and reboot it through some triggers, you can reset the genes, repair the gut wall, and things are better again. If you don't do it, you know, you end up taking pills that only vaguely modify symptoms, and the disease just keeps getting worse and worse. And so, depending on how far advanced we are in these different diseases, we might have to do a more serious rebooting of the system. But it's possible to do that, and just not something that many people are trained in. Only naturopaths, people in functional medicine, integrative medicine, most doctors don't know anything about nutrition. They don't really understand it. So you've got to get some good experts in this area and get back to being more natural.
I'm really pleased to know that my mother was recently in the hospital. She's been in the hospital a couple of times lately, actually, and they put her on antibiotics, and they prescribed her Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a type of probiotic. So, you know, the fact that they are actually prescribing and giving patients that probiotic while they're on antibiotics, I thought, is a quantum leap for the medical system and hospitals.
Yeah, and 10 years ago, nobody would have taken it seriously, but because they can study the microbiome, because they can study it in a scientific way, they don't have to believe some ancient knowledge, now they're taking it seriously, and boy, thank goodness, some parts of technology are really amazing and wonderful.
Can you explain the connection between an impaired microbiome and the incidence of weight gain or the risk or the tendency to put on weight?
Well, that's a really interesting one, and there's a lot of attention on it. There's a paper in the New York Times just came out, an article. You know, they were talking about a study done where they had found that people that went on various weight gain programs that the ones that had the best effect had a whole kind of different composition of bacteria than those that the weight programs really didn't do anything to. So people are kind of waking up. Hey, there may be over 1,000 studies, clinical studies going on right now looking at probiotics, and a lot of them are focused on weight gain. And I have to go into one slightly icky and disgusting topic to really explain it. I hope you don't mind. It's called fecal transplant. You may have already talked about it on your program, but it's where they literally take poop from a person and put it into another person, and it's extremely effective for certain bacteria, Clostridium difficile, which is a terrible diarrhea infection that people in hospitals can't get rid of. Now most hospitals will do the fecal transplant. Well, they did a study where they took feces or stool from a human. They were twins. One was turned out to be very obese. The other was very thin. And they put it into mice, normal mice, and they find that the stool sample, which is a lot of the gut bacteria are in the stool sample because you're just basically injecting in some of the bacteria from the fat person into the mouse and then from the thin person into another mouse. And, of course, you know, what happens is the mouse that gets the fat bacteria gets fat and the mouse that gets the thin bacteria, it's thin. So it's pretty convincing. You're looking at it, you're saying, wow. If that can change obesity, that's amazing. Now, nobody in their right mind is going to try to market that procedure because it's just not something people like very much. But they are trying to figure out with probiotics if they can isolate which bacteria are causing that mouse to be fat and which bacteria are causing the other mouse to be thin. They're really working hard to try to figure out what formula they can get, what kind of a way that the probiota they can give that could achieve weight loss. And so far nobody's done it, but it's massively being researched. It's millions of dollars being poured into this because the animal studies are so exciting and promising. We don't know the mechanics. We know that the composition of gut bacteria, well, what does it mean? I have a different composition than you do. It means, I have a different diet. It means maybe I live in a different region. My region might have more fibers than yours does. I may have had more antibiotics than you. I may be taking certain minerals or vitamins with these bacteria like. And so why does the composition of bacteria have anything to do with weight? Well, we've got to remember these bacteria send messages to our brain. The hormones ghrelin and leptin, we've all probably heard about those. Those are the hormones that basically control whether we feel full or we're hungry. And these bacteria can produce, they can mimic these hormones. They can produce substances that mimic it. So they can affect whether we have cravings, whether we, need to eat or we feel satisfied. They can make us depressed. They can make us happy. They can change how fat metabolism is going on in the body. It's just extraordinary the effect they have, because they make chemicals, maybe thousands of chemicals, that go into the bloodstream that can affect genes, that can affect hormone production, that can affect the brain. They produce neurotransmitters that can get into the brain. So this is a powerful organ that's sitting in our gut that has quite a big influence. There's something called the gut-brain axis, and it's bidirectional communication. The brain, if it's stressed, can shut down the digestive system. The digestive system, if it's upset, can shut down the brain. It's bidirectional. So we're looking at a whole new complex network that involves the immune system, the hormone system. I mean, we produce a lot of hormones in our gut. There's a whole secondary endocrine system which produces a vast number of hormones that have huge effects in the body. Our nervous system in the gut, called the enteric nervous system, produces 90% of the serotonin in our body. And we know serotonin is super important in the brain. It's also important in the body. So this is a very, very powerful organ, our gut, and it has not only an influence on the psychological as well as, the physical factors that affect weight gain and weight loss.
Would you say that all autoimmune diseases have a gut component?
I would. I would say that at this point. I think that you'd have to bring genetics into it. Because, people have a genetic predisposition, and that's quite important. But I would say that once you've taken the genetics into account, then I would say the gut is the next most important factor. There's no reason why the body should attack itself. I mean, I remember, I was once diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. It turned out I had Lyme disease. But, when I thought I had rheumatoid arthritis, I thought, what the heck is going on here? Why is my body attacking itself? Is there any logical reason for this? No, there isn't. So it's something wacky where the immune system really gets overexcited. And the clearest explanation I've seen for that, because 80% of your immune system is your gut, in your gut, is that's where it starts. And then it starts to spread to different organs depending upon your genetic predisposition. So I would say that, and a lot of people would agree with that right now. There's probably people that will disagree, of course, but it's amazing how many scientists are coming to the same conclusion.
So I think that's a really important point that I want to emphasize. If anyone is dealing with arthritis, osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, MS, Meniere's disease, I mean, there's so Hashimoto's thyroiditis, endometriosis is now considered an autoimmune condition. The list goes on and on. There's just so many conditions that fall under the category of an autoimmune disease. So if anyone has a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, you must recognize the role of the gut and an impaired gut function as one of the causes. I think, you can't say it's the cause, but there are many things, including the emotional, mental, and spiritual component, that have driven the imbalance to this place. So you've got to look at the diet. You've got to look at healing the lining of the gut, repairing the environment of the gut to begin to really have a successful healing journey with this condition, whatever it may manifest as.
Yeah, it's because we now understand. We knew that the nervous system was connected with the endocrine system. We knew that the nervous system was connected with the immune system. So we knew these different systems had, and that's been a kind of a very exciting area of science over the last 20 or 30 years, that, oh, you know, the mind can affect the immune system. So that's, you know, rather interesting and exciting. Stress could shut down the immune system. And we know the mechanisms, you know, cortisol, you know, we know different hormones are often doing it. But now we have to throw in the gut, because that's part of this network. And it's been a really, really important part of it. When you think that a huge number of hormones are produced in the gut, a lot of nerve cells are in the gut, and 80% of the immune system's in the gut. So, wow, this is suddenly a very, very important player that we left out of all these kind of new findings of mind-body medicine. Now it's really mind-body-gut medicine, you know, that we're coming up with.
You know, I have a specialty with women's health, and I was amazed many, many years ago to learn about the connection between this, you know, dysbiosis, impaired gut environment, and the relationship of generating estrogen in the body, because the condition going on right now for a majority of women is this imbalance of an excess of estrogen in relationship to their other hormones, and that this gut environment was one of the sources that was throwing our hormones so out of balance.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm there's so many interesting new connections that are kind of mind-boggling, and the hormones is one of the most important ones. And the fact that these gut bacteria can actually mimic hormones, they can produce chemicals that mimic hormones, and that you think of all the different gut hormones that are produced, that are sometimes they're peptides, sometimes they're, you know, they're all different kinds of things that are produced in the gut, which have a wide range of effects in the body. And it's just like, it's sort of like ecology. You know, you study ecology and, oh, okay, this does that and that. And then you get deeper and deeper into it, and you see how everything is interconnected. And if you do one thing, it causes something else here. And it's just fun when you start kind of unfolding all these intricate, interesting interconnections. Yeah.
So in the time we have left, what would be some of your most effective and recommended strategies to help people heal their gut, based on, especially on the Ayurvedic approach?
Good. Okay. Well, as I, you know, outline in the book, our book, my wife and I wrote this book together, Gut Crisis, as I outline in that book, really, the number one thing is rest and repair. You have to give the gut a chance to repair itself. And you have to do that by just taking some time out of your life, which is hard, not traveling, not being so stressed out you can't control your diet. And you just really have to take a period of time, usually a month is what's recommended by, and I, you know, there are many, many different diets out there, and I kind of review a lot of them. The Ayurveda one is a very simple one, mostly vegetables, with just, again, eliminating gluten, dairy, and just going for a very simple kind of vegetable broth, which can be a rice broth. It can be it can include certain proteins in it, like mung dal and other sorts of proteins that can help. But just doing that for a month, and real simple. You don't eat late at night. You give it the gut as much time as it needs. You know, only eat meals three times a day, and dinner is, you know, the one that's the smallest meal. And you really give time for the gut to repair itself. That, I think, is number one. Number two, when you get off that diet, you've got to keep a food log, and you've got to watch and see, reintroduce one food at a time, and find out if you are gluten sensitive, find out how sugar affects you, find out how everything affects you, and then design your own diet. And, you know, if you're aware of the Ayurveda body types and you're aware of the diet, I have all that information on my website. You can take the quiz, find out what you are. That Ayurveda gives you a lot of help in knowing that, you know, these foods are better for Vata, these foods are better for Pitta, these foods are better for Kapha. And once you've got your diet design, then you've got to go to probiotics. You can go to natural probiotics. Can go to pills, and you can do it in different ways. You can do it oral probiotics. You can do a probiotic enema. Different ways of doing it, but you got to reestablish the gut population. It's been decimated through antibiotics, through a lot of different things, toxins we've taken in, and so you got to give a little help there. Some people have to take probiotics their whole lives. Others can kind of reboot the system and they're okay. But, you know, having like in Ayurveda, yogurt in a form where they call lassi, where it's one-third yogurt, two-thirds water every day, is a really easy and nice and simple way of taking the probiotics. And then, you know, after that, it's kind of being consistent. Because if you go nuts and eat a lot of junk food, it's, you know, your body's going to go out of whack again. So you have to kind of establish a good routine. Sleep is very important. Yoga, exercise. I'm a firm believer in meditation. I love transcendental meditation. I think it has an enormously good effect on people, on being able to stick to their diets, on being happier, healthier, being more motivated, having more energy. All those good things that are recommended. You know, a person like yourself is a naturopath. All those things you recommend, they're just great. They all help. And, if you know, you got to try to get yourself on a path that you've discovered for yourself and which makes you feel good. And you can get help. You know, naturopaths know this. There are a lot of gut experts out there. I list a lot of the best experts. I think it's really important in the beginning to get some help from a health coach or a really good health expert. The one I went to actually in Florida was my wife and I went to was trained in Chinese medicine, but she was fabulous. She knew everything about it, and I kind of recount my experiences with her, but I don't think I would have done it unless I had someone. And then I went back to Ayurveda and I started to re-examine things and I realized, hey, it was there anyway. I just didn't quite know it. And something Ayurveda didn't take into account, you know, like antibiotics weren't around 2,000 years ago and all the kind of food that we have that's so the hybrid kind of wheat that's so loaded with gluten wasn't around. So, yeah, that's why integrative medicine is so good, where you integrate the old with the new into a platform that's kind of more geared to our current lifestyle. But all that stuff is outlined in the book and on the website.
So we've kind of come to the end, but I want to remind people of the website because it's got great information. You have a great quiz there, and it's docgut.com. So I encourage everyone to go up there, take the quiz, learn about yourself, order the book, Gut Crisis, How Diet, Probiotics, and Friendly Bacteria Help You Lose Weight and Heal Your Body and Mind. It's such an important topic. It will absolutely support your health, your ability to recuperate from chronic illnesses, and support long-term rejuvenation. So this is all part of the journey we are on to regain and optimize our health and well-being. And I just really want to thank you for the wonderful work you're doing. We've been having a conversation, if you've just been joining us, with Robert Keith Wallace, author of Gut Crisis. So, Keith, thank you so much for your passion on this subject and helping to get the information out and sharing solutions that really are effective so we can look after our gut microbiome for the long term. So thank you again for all your wisdom and sharing with us today.
It's my pleasure. And I should just mention I'm at a university, Maharishi University of Management in Fairfield, Iowa, and we have many continuing educational programs that talk about Ayurveda, a master's degree in Ayurveda, and I will be having a course that'll give out a whole diet program too.
Well, that's great because we all need it. We all need the guidance to help us get back on the track. We've wandered so far off of it that we've kind of lost our way. So that's great news.
They'll be online, so you don't have to come to Iowa.
Oh, darn. I've always looked forward to coming to Iowa in the wintertime. Well, thank you. Thanks again. It's just been such a pleasure. And I want to thank all my listeners for joining me today for another opportunity to get empowered with truthful information. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.